Osho, the Heart Sutra, talks on Prajna Paramita, the Dhyan Sutra of Gautama the Buddha, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 7.
Bhagwan. Therefore, O Sariputra, it is because of his non-entainmentness that a bodhisattva, through having relied on the perfection of wisdom, dwells without thought coverings. In the absence of thought coverings, he has not been made to tremble, he has overcome what can upset, and in the end he attains to nirvana. All those who appear as Buddhas in the three periods of time, fully awake to the utmost, right and perfect enlightenment, because they have relied on the perfection of wisdom.
What is meditation? Because this whole Heart Sutra is about the innermost core of meditation. Let us go into it. First thing, meditation is not concentration. In concentration, there is a self concentrating, and there is an object being concentrated upon. There is duality. In meditation, there is nobody inside and nothing outside. It is not concentration. There is no division between the in and the out. The in goes on flowing into the out goes on flowing into the in. The demarcation, the boundary, the border, no more exists. The in is out, the out is in. It is a non-dual consciousness. Concentration is a dual consciousness. That's why concentration creates tiredness. That's why when you concentrate, you feel exhausted. And you cannot concentrate 24 hours. You will have to take holidays to rest. Concentration can never become your nature. Meditation does not tire. Meditation does not exhaust you. Meditation can become a 24-hour thing, day in, day out, year in, year out. It can become eternity. It is relaxation itself. Concentration is an act, willed act. Meditation is a state of no will, a state of inaction. It is relaxation. One has simply dropped into one's own being. And that being is the same as the being of all. In concentration, there is a plan, a projection, an idea. In concentration, the mind functions out of a conclusion. You are doing something. Concentration comes out of the past. In meditation, there is no conclusion behind it. You are not doing anything in particular. You are simply being. It has no past to it. It is uncontaminated by the past. It has no future to it. It is pure of all future. It is what Lao Tzu has called Wei Wu Wei, action through inaction. It is what Zen masters have been saying, sitting silently, doing nothing, and the spring comes, and the grass grows by itself. Remember, by itself. Nothing is being done. You are not pulling the grass upwards. The spring comes and the grass grows by itself. That stage, when you allow life to go on its own way, when you don't want to direct it, when you don't want to give any control to it, when you are not manipulating, when you are not enforcing any discipline on it, that state of pure, undisciplined spontaneity is what meditation is. Meditation is in the present, pure present. Meditation is immediacy. You cannot meditate. You can be in meditation. You cannot be in concentration, but you can concentrate. Concentration is human, meditation is divine. Concentration has a center in you. From that center it comes. Concentration has a self in you. In fact, the man who concentrates very much starts gathering a very strong self. He starts becoming more and more powerful. He starts becoming more and more an integrated will. He will look more collected, more of one piece. The man of meditation does not become powerful. He becomes silent. He becomes peaceful. Power is created out of conflict. All power is out of friction. Out of friction comes electricity. You can create electricity out of water when the river falls from a mountainside. There is friction between the river and the rocks, and the friction creates energy. That's why people who are seeking power are always fighting. Fight creates energy. It is always through friction that energy is created, power is created. The world goes again and again into war because the world is too much dominated by the idea of power. You cannot be powerful without fighting. Meditation brings peace. Peace has its own power. But that is an altogether different phenomenon. The power that is created out of friction is violent, aggressive, male. The power, I am using the word because there is no other words, the power that comes out of peace is feminine. It has a grace to it. It is passive power. It is receptivity. It is openness. It is not out of friction, that's why it is not violent. Buddha is powerful. Powerful in his peace, in his silence. He is as powerful as a rose flower. He is not powerful like an atom bomb. He is as powerful as the smile of a child. Very fragile. Very vulnerable. But he is not as powerful as a sword. He is powerful as a small earthen lamp, the small flame, burning bright in the dark night. It is a totally different dimension of power. This power is what we call divine power. It is out of no friction. Concentration is a friction. You fight with your own mind. You try to focus the mind in a certain way, towards a certain idea, towards a certain object. You force it. You bring it back again and again. It tries to escape. It runs away. It goes astray. It starts thinking of thousand and one things. And you bring it again and you force it. You go in a self-fight. Certainly power is created. That power is as harmful as any other power. That power is as dangerous as any other power. That power will again be used to harm somebody. Because the power that comes out of friction is violence. Something out of violence is going to be violent. It is going to be destructive. The power that comes out of peace, non-friction, non-fight, non-manipulation is the power of a rose flower, the power of a small lamp, the power of a child smiling, the power of a woman weeping, the power that is in the tears and in the dewdrops. It is immense but not heavy. It is infinite but not violent. Concentration will make you a man of will. Meditation will make you an emptiness. That's what Buddha is saying to Sariputra. Prajna Paramita exactly means meditation. Wisdom of the beyond. You cannot bring it, but you can be open to it. You need not do anything to bring it into the world. You cannot bring it. It is beyond you. You have to disappear for it to come. The mind has to cease for meditation to be. Concentration is mind effort. Meditation is a state of no mind. Meditation is pure awareness. Meditation has no motive in it. Meditation is the tree that grows out without a seed. That is the miracle of meditation, the magic, the mystery. Concentration has a seed in it. You concentrate for a certain purpose. There is motive. It is motivated. Meditation has no motive. Then why one should meditate if there is no motive? Meditation comes only into existence when you have looked into all motives and found them lacking. When you have gone through the whole round of the motives and you have seen the falsity of it, you have seen that the motives lead nowhere, that you go on moving in circles, you remain the same. The motives go on and on, leading you, driving you, almost driving you mad, creating new desires, but nothing is ever achieved. The hands remain empty as ever. When this has been seen, when you have looked into your life and seen all your motives failing, no motive has ever succeeded. No motive has ever brought any blessing to anybody. The motives only promise. The goods are never delivered. And one motive fails, and another motive comes in and promises you again, and you are deceived again. Being deceived again and again by motives, one day suddenly you become aware, suddenly you see into it. And that very seeing is the beginning of meditation. It has no seed in it. It has no motive in it. If you are meditating for something, then you are concentrating, not meditating. Then you are still in the world, that your mind is still interested in cheap things, in trivia. Then you are worldly. Even if you are meditating to attain to God, you are worldly. Even if you are meditating to attain to nirvana, you are worldly. Because meditation has no goal. Meditation is an insight that all goals are false. Meditation is an understanding that desires don't lead anywhere. Seeing that, and this is not a belief that you can get from me or from Buddha or from Jesus. This is not knowledge. You will have to see it. You can see it right now. You have lived. You have seen many motives. You have been in turmoil. You have thought about what to do, what not to do. And you have done many things. Where it has all led you. Just see into it. I'm not saying agree with me. I'm not saying believe in me. I'm simply making you alert of a fact that you have been neglecting. This is not a theory. This is a simple statement of a very simple fact. Maybe because it is so simple, that's why you go on without looking at it. Mind is always interested in complexities, because something can be done with a complex thing. You cannot do anything with a simple phenomenon. The simple is overlooked. The simple is neglected. The simple is ignored. The simple is so obvious, you never look into it. You go on searching for complexities. The complexity has a challenge into it. The complexity of a phenomena, of a problem, of a situation, gives you a challenge. In that challenge comes energy, friction, conflict. You have to solve this problem. You have to prove that you can solve this problem. When a problem is there, you are thrilled by the excitement that there is a possibility to prove something. But what I am stating is a simple fact. It is not a problem. It gives you no challenge. It is simply there. You can look it or you can avoid it. And it doesn't shout. It is so simple. You cannot even call it a still small voice within you. It does not even whisper. It is simply there. You can look. You may not look. See it. And when I say see it right now, immediately. There is no need to wait. And be quick when I say see it. Do see it, but quickly. Because if you start thinking, if you don't see it quickly, immediately, in that split second, then the mind comes in and the mind starts brooding and the mind starts bringing thoughts and the mind starts bringing prejudices. And you are in a philosophical state. Many thoughts. Then you have to choose what is right and what is wrong. And speculation has started. You miss the existential movement. Existential movement is right now. Just have a look. And that is meditation. That look is a meditation. Just seeing the facticity of a certain thing, of a certain state, is meditation. Meditation has no motive, hence no center to it. And because there is no motive and no center, there is no self in it. You don't function from a center in meditation. You act out of nothingness. The response out of nothingness is what meditation is all about. Mind concentrates, it acts out of the past. Meditation acts in the present, out of the present. It is a pure response to the present. It is not reaction. It acts not out of conclusions. It acts seeing the existential. Watch in your life. There is a great difference when you act out of conclusions. You see a man. You feel attracted. A beautiful man. Looks very good. Looks innocent. His eyes are beautiful. The vibe is beautiful. But then the man introduces you, himself, and he says, I am a Jew and you are a Christian. Something immediately clicks and there is distance. Now the man is no more innocent. The man is no more beautiful. You have certain ideas about Jews. Or he is a Christian and you are a Jew. You have certain ideas about a Christian. What Christianity has done to Jews in the past. What other Christians have done to Jews. How they have tortured Jews down the ages. And suddenly he is a Christian and something immediately changes. This is acting out of conclusions, prejudices. Not looking at this man, because this man may not be the man that you think a Jew has to be. Because each Jew is a different kind of man, each Hindu is a different kind of man, so is each Mohammedan. You cannot act out of prejudices. You cannot act by categorizing people. You cannot pigeonhole people. Nobody can be pigeonholed. You may have been deceived by 100 communists, and when the 101 communist meets, don't go believing in the category that you have made in your mind, that communists are deceptive or anything. This may be a different type of man, because no two persons are alike. Whenever you act out of conclusions, it is mind. When you look into the present and you don't allow any idea to obstruct the reality, to obstruct the fact, you just look into the fact and act out of that look, that is meditation. Meditation is not something that you do in the morning and you are finished with it. Meditation is something that you have to go on living every moment of your life, walking, sleeping, sitting, talking, listening. It has to become a kind of climate. A relaxed person remains in it. A person who goes on dropping the past remains meditative. Never act out of conclusions. Those conclusions are your conditionings, your prejudices, your desires, your fears, and all the rest of it. In short, you are there. You means your past. You means your all the experiences of the past. Don't allow the dead to overrule the living. Don't allow the past to influence the present. Don't allow death to overpower your life. That's what meditation is. In short, in meditation, you are not there. The dead is not controlling the living. This is a kind of experience, meditation, which gives you a totally different quality to live your life. Then you don't live like a Hindu or a Mohammedan, Indian or German. You simply live as consciousness. When you live in the moment and there is nothing interfering, attention is total. Because there is no distraction. Distractions come from the past and the future. When attention is total, act is total. It leaves no residue. It goes on freeing you. It never creates cages for you. It never imprisons you. And that is the ultimate goal of Buddha. That's what he calls Nirvana. Nirvana means freedom. Utterly absolute. Unobstructed, you become an open sky. There is no border to it. It is infinite. It is simply there. And then there is nothingness all around you. within and without. Nothingness is the function of a meditative state of consciousness. And in that nothingness is benediction. That nothingness itself is the benediction. Now the sutras. Therefore, O Sariputra, it is because of his non-attainmentness that a bodhisattva, through having relied on the perfection of wisdom, dwells without thought coverings. In the absence of thought coverings, he has not been made to tremble. He has overcome what can upset, and in the end, he attains to nirvana. Remember that therefore is always an indication that Buddha is going on looking into Sariputra's nothingness. And as he goes on feeling that his energies are relaxing, his energies are no more in turmoil, that he is not brooding, but listening, that he is not thinking, but just is there with Buddha, present, open, available. That therefore indicates to that unfoldment of Sariputra's being. Buddha is seeing more and more petals are opening. So he can go a step further. So he can take Sariputra a little more deeper. Sariputra is available. This therefore is not logical. This therefore is existential. Looking into Buddha, Sariputra is unfolding. And looking into Sariputra, Buddha is ready to take him a little further towards the beyond. Each statement is going deeper and higher. Therefore, O Sariputra, it is because of his non-attainmentness that a bodhisattva, through having relied on the perfection of wisdom, dwells without thought coverings. Each single word has to be meditated upon. Not concentrated, mind you, meditated, listened to, looked into, not contemplated, not thought about. These things are higher than thought, bigger than thought. Thought is silly in these realms. First he says it is because of his non-attainmentness. Meditation cannot be attained because meditation cannot have a motive. When you attain something, you attain through a motive. When you attain something, you always have to work for the future and plan for the future. You cannot attain anything right now except meditation. Let me repeat it. You cannot attain anything right now except meditation. Why? If you want money, you cannot attain it right now. You will have to work hard for it. Legally, illegally, but you will have to work for it. There are slow ways you may become a businessman, and there are faster ways you may become a politician, but you will have to do something. Slow or fast, but time will be needed. Time is a must. Without time, you cannot attain money. If there is no time, in this very moment, how can you attain? Even if you want to rob the neighbors, if you want to pick the pockets of the person who is sitting by your side, even that will take time. Time is a must if you want to become famous. Time will be needed. If you want to become politically powerful, time will be needed. Only meditation can be attained right now, this very moment, instantaneously. Why? Because it is your nature. Why? Because it is already there. You have not claimed it, that's right, but it remains there unclaimed. You can claim it right now. Not even a single moment has to be lost. It is because of his non-attainmentness. And nirvana is nothing but meditation come full circle. God is nothing but the bud of meditation become a flower. These are not attainments. These are your very realities. You can go on overlooking for ages, neglecting for ages, but you cannot lose them. They are there, just sitting inside you. Any day you close your eyes and look, and you will start laughing. And you have been searching for this blessing, and searching in wrong places. You were searching this security that comes out of nothingness. But you were searching in money, in bank balance, in this and that. And it never happened through that. It cannot happen through that. Nothing outside you can make your life secure. The outside is insecure. How can it make your life secure? The government cannot make your life secure because the government itself is insecure. The revolution may be coming. The bank cannot make your life secure because the bank may go bankrupt. Only banks can go bankrupt. Who else? The woman that you love cannot make your life secure. She may fall in love with somebody else. The man that you love cannot make your life secure. He may die. All these things remain there. So the more you have securities outside, the more insecure you become. Because then you are afraid of the bank because it may go bankrupt. If you don't have any account, you don't care. Let it go bankrupt any day. But if you have your bank account there, then you are worried. Then you have attained to one more insecurity. This possibility of the bank going bankrupt. Now you cannot sleep because you go on thinking what is going to happen. If you have put your trust in anything outside, that creates more insecurity. That's why the richer a person becomes, the more insecure. And I am not in favor of poverty, remember. I am not saying be poor. Poverty has nothing holy in it. And I am not saying that the poor person is secure. He has his insecurities. The rich man has his insecurities. Of course, the rich man's insecurities are more complex, and the poor man's insecurities are simple. But the insecurities are there. And I am not saying that to be poor is something very special, or to be poor is something very important and significant, or that you can brag that you are poor. To be poor has nothing to do with spirituality. Neither to be rich has anything to do with spirituality. Those are irrelevant facts. The poor also looks outside as much as the rich. Maybe the poor has only a bullock cart, and the rich has a Cadillac. But that doesn't matter. The bullock cart is as much outside as the Cadillac. Both look outside. The rich may have many bank accounts, and the poor may have just a small purse, or may have a little money saved. But that doesn't matter. Both look outside. The security is on the inward path. Because there you come to know that there is nobody to die, that there is nobody to suffer, that there is nothing that can happen, that there is pure sky. Clouds come and go, and the sky abides. Lives come and go, forms come and go, but the nothingness abides. This nothingness is already there. That's why Buddha calls it, it can be attained only when you understand that it is non-attainable. It can be attained only when you understand the basic fact that it is already there, that it is already the case. This emptiness that is there is not in any way to be evolved, developed. It is fully there. Hence, it can be attained in a single moment. Buddha calls it full emptiness. Because emptiness can only be full if it is there. If it is not full, that means something else than the emptiness is also there. And that something else will hamper, obstruct, and that something else will create a duality, and that something else will create a friction, and that something else will create tension, and that something else will create anxiety. You cannot be at ease with something else. Emptiness is there only when it is full, when all obstructions have been dropped, when you don't have anything inside. Nobody there to be as an observer to it. Buddha says this emptiness is not even an experience. Because if you experience it, that means you were there to experience it. It is you. So you cannot experience it. You can experience only something that is not you. Experience means duality. The observer and the observed, the knower and the known, the subject and the object, the seer and the seen. But there is only emptiness, nobody to see it, nobody to be seen, nothing as an object, nothing as a subject. This non-dual emptiness is full. It is utterly full. Its fullness cannot be refined. Its fullness cannot be added. Nothing can be taken out of it because there is nothing, and nothing can be added to it. It is utterly full. Full emptiness is not an experience. because there is no experiencer in it. Hence, Buddha says, spirituality is not an experience. God cannot be experienced. Those who say that I have experienced God either don't understand what they are saying, or they are using a very, very inadequate language. You cannot experience God. In that experience, you are not found. The experience is there, but the experiencer is not there, so you cannot claim it as an experience. So whenever somebody asks Buddha, have you experienced God? He keeps quiet. He does not say a single word. He changes the subject immediately. He starts talking about something else. Whenever it was asked, his whole life, he consistently remained silent. Many people thought that he has not experienced God, that's why he keeps quiet. But he is the only person who has not said anything, negative or positive. And it is not because he has not experienced. He has experienced, but it cannot be tagged as an experience. That's why he keeps quiet. That's why Jesus remained silent when Pontius Pilate asked, what is truth? J. Krishnamurti goes on saying, and he makes a very subtle distinction between experience and experiencing. And that's a beautiful distinction. He says, it is an experiencing, not an experience. It is a process, not a thing. It is alive, not dead. It is ongoing, not finished. You enter into God and then it is an ongoing phenomenon. It goes on and on and on for eternity. You never come out of it. It is an experiencing, a live process like a river, like a flower opening and opening and opening, and goes on opening. And there comes never any end to it. To say that one has experienced God is stupid, cheap and silly. To say that one has attained moksha, nirvana, truth, is not very meaningful. Because these are things which cannot be categorized as attainments. So Buddha says, therefore, O Sariputra, it is because of his non-attainmentness. When the mind has come to a stop and is no more interested in attaining anything, then it attains Buddhahood. When the mind has come to a full stop and is not going anywhere, it starts going inwards. It starts falling into one's own being, that abysmal abyss. Full emptiness is attained by a non-attainmentness. So don't become achievers. Don't start thinking in terms of achievement that you have to achieve this and that. That you have to attain God. These are games. The mind is again deceiving you. The name of the game changes, but the game, the subtle game, remains the same. That a bodhisattva attains through non-attainmentness, through having relied on the perfection of wisdom. This is a very, very significant statement. Buddha says one should rely on nothing whatsoever. Now this is very against to the ordinary Buddhist religion. Because the ordinary Buddhist religion has three fundamental refuses. Buddham saranam gacchami, Sangham saranam gacchami, Dhammam saranam gacchami. The disciple, when he comes to Buddha, bows down to him, surrenders to him, says, I take refuge in the Buddha. Buddham saranam gacchami. I take refuge in the community of the Buddha. Sangham saranam gacchami. I take refuge in the law taught by the Buddha. Dhammam saranam gacchami. And Buddha says here that one should not rely on anything. There is no refuge, nowhere any shelter. This Heart Sutra has been called the soul of Buddhism. And the church of Buddha has been called the body. Those three refuses are for the very ordinary minds who is in search of some shelter, some prop, some support. These statements are for the highest soul, one who has come to the sixth and is just hanging between the sixth and the seventh. Just a little puss. Therefore, O Sariputra, it has been said that the first sermon of Buddha, which is called the sermon of the turning of the wheel of religion, Dhamma Chakra Pravattan Sutra, that was his first sermon near Varanasi. That created the so-called ordinary religion for the ordinary mass. In that sermon he declares, come and take refuge in Buddha. Come and take refuge in the law taught by the Buddha. Come and take refuge in the community, in the commune of the Buddha. After 20 years, he declares this second dispensation. 20 years he took to bring few people to the highest possibility. This is called the second most important sermon. First was in Sarnath near Varanasi, when he told to people, come and take refuge in me. I have attained. Come and take refuge in me. I have reached. Come and partake of me. I have arrived. Come and follow me. That was for the ordinary minds. It is natural. Buddha could not have declared the Heart Sutra. The masses will not have been able to understand. Then he worked for 20 years with his disciples. Now Sariputra is coming very close. Because of that closeness, he says, therefore, O Sariputra, now I can say it to you. I can say it to you that having relied on the perfection of wisdom, only on one thing, One has to rely, and that is meditation. Only on one thing one has to rely, and that is awareness, attentiveness. Only one thing one has to rely upon, that is one's own inner source, being. Everything else has to be dropped. All refuses. Through having relied on nothing but the perfection of meditation, what one has to do is not to rely on anything, worldly or otherwise, to let it all go, to give the resulting emptiness a free run, unobstructed by any for or against attitude, to stop relying on anything, to seek nowhere any refuge or support. That is the real renunciation. Our separate self is a spurious reality which can maintain itself only by finding supports or props on which to lean or rely. To go for refuge to the three treasures is the central act of the Buddhist religion. Refuge in the Buddha, refuge in the Sangha, refuge in the Dhamma. Here Buddha refutes that. It is not contradictory. He simply says that which you can understand. In my assertions, you will find 1001 contradictions, because they have been in reference to different people. The more you will be growing, different assertions will be made by me. Because my assertions are a response to you. I am not talking with the walls. I am talking to you, and I can give only that much which you can receive. The higher your consciousness, the deeper your consciousness, different things will be stated by me. Naturally, those different statements will be very contradictory. If one will go for a logical consistency, he will not find any. You cannot find in Buddha's statements any logical consistency. That's why the day Buddha died, Buddhism was divided into 36 schools. The exact day he died, and the disciples were divided into 36 schools. What happened? Because he has been making so many statements to different people because of their different consciousness and understanding. They all started quarreling and fighting. They said, this has been said to me by Buddha. Just think, the first five disciples to whom he has said, I have attained, now come to me and I will take you there. If those first disciples meet Sariputra and Sariputra says it is attained, through a kind of non-attainmentness, that one who declares that I have attained is wrong, because it cannot be attained. What those first disciples will say? They will say, what are you talking about? We are the oldest disciples, the senior most. And this was the first statement that Buddha has made to us, that I have attained. In fact, we would have never followed him if he had not declared that. Because he declared, we followed him. Our motive was clear, that he has attained, we also wanted to attain. That's why we followed him. And he had said to us, that I am your refuge, come and take refuge in me. let me be your shelter. And what nonsense you are talking about. Buddha could not have said this. You must have misunderstood. Something has gone wrong, or you have fabricated it. Now this statement, this Harsh Sutra, is made in privacy. It has been told to Sariputra. It is specifically addressed to Sariputra. It is like a letter. Sariputra cannot produce any proofs, because in those days tape recorders were not in existence. He can simply say, he can take an oath that I am not saying anything untrue. Buddha has said to me that rely only on your meditation and nothing else. The mind that relies on something else is the spurious self, the ego. The ego cannot exist without props. It wants props. Something has to support it. Once all props have been removed, the ego falls to the ground and disappears. But only when the ego falls to the ground arises in you that consciousness which is eternal, which is timeless, deathless. Here Buddha says, there is no refuge, Sariputra. There is no remedy, Sariputra. There is nothing and nowhere to go. You are already there. This full emptiness, if you reach into it unprepared, will give you a great trembling. If you are thrown into it by somebody, for example, sometimes people come to me with deep love and respect. They say, Bhagwan, why don't you push me a little hard? If you are not ready for it and you are pushed into it, it is not going to help. It may hinder your progress for many lives to come. Once you have gone unprepared into that nothingness, you will be so shocked, so frightened, so scared to death, that never again you will come to any person for at least few lives who talks about nothingness, who talks about God. You will avoid that. Fear will become a seed in you. No, you cannot be pushed unprepared. You can be pushed only slowly, slowly. Only in the same proportion as you are prepared. Have you heard the famous statement of Soren Kierkegaard, the Danish philosopher, the founder of modern existentialism? He says, man is a trembling, constant trembling. Why? Because death is there. Why? Because one day the fear is there, I may not be. He is true about the ordinary minds. Everybody is trembling. The problem is always to be or not to be. It is always hanging there, the death. You cannot conceive yourself disappearing into nothingness. It hurts. It frightens. And if you look deep inside yourself, you will find yourself trembling with the idea of being nothing. You want to be. You want to remain. You want to persist. You want to persist forever. That's why people who don't know anything about their inner being go on believing that the soul is immortal. Not because they know, but because of fear. Because of that trembling, they have to believe that the soul is immortal. That is a kind of wish fulfillment. So any idiot who is talking about the immortality of the soul will appeal to you. You will get hooked. Not that you have understood what he is saying. He may not have understood himself. But it will be very appealing. In India, people believe in the immortality of the soul. And you cannot find more cowardly people anywhere else. For 1,000 years, they remained slaves. Slaves to very small countries. Anybody who came to India, conquered India, with no difficulty at all. It was so simple. And these are the people who believe in the immortality of the soul. In fact, a country that believes in the immortality of the soul cannot be conquered at all. Because nobody will be afraid to die. How can you conquer a person who is not afraid to die? They would have all died, but they would not have yielded to any kind of submission. They could not have yielded to any conquerors. But for 1,000 years, India remained a slave. Very easily it remained a slave. England is a very small country. There are few districts in India which are bigger. England could rule over this big country easily. It was not difficult. Why? And these people believe that the soul is immortal. The belief is not their experience. The belief is out of fear. Then everything is explained. These are cowardly people, afraid. Afraid to die. Hence they cling to the idea that the soul is immortal. Not that they know. Not that they have experienced. They have never experienced anything like that. They have only experienced the death that surrounds. Because of death, they are so much afraid. So on the one hand, they go on believing in the immortality of the soul. On another hand, anybody can torture them and they are ready to submit and touch the feet. It is out of fear man believes in the immortality. It is out of fear man believes in God. It is out of trembling. Soren Kierkegaard is right about the ordinary mind. Another existentialist philosopher, Jean-Paul Sartre, says, man is condemned to be free. Why condemned? Why this ugly word, condemned? Freedom, is it a kind of condemnation? Yes, for the ordinary mind it is. Because freedom means danger. Freedom means you cannot rely on anything. You have to rely only on yourself. Freedom means all props have been taken away, all supports disappear. Freedom basically means nothingness. You are free only when you are nothing. Listen to what Sartre says. Man as freedom becomes anguish. Anguish? Out of freedom? Yes, if you are not ready for it, if you are not prepared to go into it, it is anguish. Nobody wants to be free. Notwithstanding what people go on saying, nobody wants to be free. People want to be slaves. Because in slavery, the responsibility can be thrown on somebody else. You are never responsible. You are just a slave. What can you do? You did only that which was ordered. But when you are free, you are afraid. Responsibility arises. each act, and you feel responsible. If you do this, this may happen. Or if you do the other thing, something else may happen. Then choice is yours, and choice creates trembling. And Jayapal Sartre is right about the ordinary mind, that freedom creates anguish. He says man is condemned to be free because freedom creates dread. It is a dreadful freedom. Nothing can guarantee me against myself when I am free. There is no value given to me on which I can take shelter. I have to create those values myself. I decide the meaning of myself and my universe alone, unjustifiable and without excuse. I am one unveiling of freedom. You are another. My freedom is a constant unveiling of my being. So is yours. Our uniqueness consists in the fact that each of us does this in his own way. But Sartre thinks freedom creates anguish, and freedom is a kind of condemnation, a curse. And Kierkegaard says man is a constant trembling, and Buddha wants you to go into this freedom, into this nothingness. Naturally, you have to be prepared for it. Sariputra is ready now. Therefore, O Sariputra, it is because of his non-attainmentness that a bodhisattva, through having relied on the perfection of wisdom, dwells without thought coverings. In the absence of thought coverings, he has not been made to tremble. He has overcome what can upset. And in the end, he attains to nirvana. He has overcome what can upset. And he has no trembling into this nothingness. It looks almost impossible to the ordinary mind how you can remain without trembling when you are disappearing. When you are melting into the unknown, how can you remain unscared? How you can manage not to escape? How you can manage not to start finding props and shelters and supports so that you can again create that feeling of being the ego, the self? That's why Buddha had to wait for 20 years. And then too, he stated this truth to Sariputra in a personal dialogue, not as a public sermon. And if people did not believe Sariputra, they are also right, because Buddha has been saying something else to them. Remember this about me. Remember this, my statements are contradictory, because they are made to different people. They are made to different consciousnesses. And the more you will be growing, more I will be becoming contradictory. The more I will have to refute what I have said before, because it will be no more relevant to you. With your growing consciousness, I will have to respond in a different way. Each turn in your consciousness will be a turn into my statements. And when I am gone, don't create 36 schools. Because 36 want to. Nothingness brings freedom. Freedom from the self is the ultimate freedom. There is no freedom higher than that. Nothingness is freedom. and it is not anguish, as J.P. Sartre says, and it is not trembling, as Kierkegaard says. It is benediction. It is the ultimate bliss. It is not trembling because there is nobody to tremble. Meditation prepares you for that. Because as you enter into meditation, you find of yourself less and less every day. And the less you find yourself, in the same proportion grows your blessings, your benediction, your blissfulness. Slowly, slowly you learn the mathematics of the inner world, that the more you are, the more in hell. The less you are, the more in heaven. The day you are not, it is nirvana. The ultimate home has arrived. You have come full circle. You have become a child again. There is no self anymore. Remember, the freedom does not mean the freedom of the self. Freedom means freedom from the self. To Sartre, it means freedom of the self. That's why it feels a condemnation. The self remains. It becomes free, but it remains. And that's why there is fear. If freedom is such that the self has disappeared in it, and there is only freedom and nobody free, then who can tremble? And who can feel the anguish? And who can feel condemned? And then there is no question of choice. That freedom acts on its own. One acts out of choicelessness, and there is no responsibility left, because there is nobody who can feel any responsibility. Nothingness acts. Wei wu wei. Non-action acts. It is a response between the inner nothingness and the outer nothingness. And there is nothing obstructing. It is because of his non-attainmentness that a bodhisattva, through having relied on the perfection of wisdom alone, dwells without thought coverings. Now there is no thought covering. And thought covering is the barrier that divides you from the outer nothingness. That's what I was saying last night to Nilambar. X mark I talked about yesterday. Yesterday evening he entered into sannyas. He became Nilambar. Nilambar means blue sky. Who is dividing the outer sky from the inner sky? Your thought coverings. Those are the clothes that don't allow your nudity to be in touch with the sky. Your nude being to be bridged with the sky. The thought that you are a Hindu, the thought that you are a Christian, the thought that you are a communist or a fascist divides. The thought that you are beautiful or ugly divides. The thought that you think you are intelligent or unintelligent divides. Any kind of thought and the division. And you have millions of thoughts. You will have to peel yourself like you peel an onion. Covering after covering. You peel one cover, another layer is there. Peel it, another layer is there. And naturally when you peel an onion, tears come to the eyes. It is painful. When you start uncovering your being, it is more painful. It is not like putting your clothes off. It is like taking your skin off. But if you go on peeling, you come one day when the whole onion has disappeared and only nothingness is left in your hands. That nothingness is bliss. Buddha says, a bodhisattva dwells without thought coverings. He is here, but he is nobody. He is here, but he has no ideas. He is here, but he has no thoughts. Not that he cannot use thoughts. I go on using thoughts continuously. I am talking to you right now. I have to use the mind and the thoughts. But they don't cover me. They are by the sides. Whenever I need, I use them. Whenever I am not using them, they are not there. My inner sky and the outer sky are one. And even while I am using there, I know that they cannot divide me. They are instrumental. You can use them, but you are not in any way covered by them. Dwells without thought coverings. Buddha says there are three kinds of thought coverings. First is karma, avarna, incomplete acts, untotal acts cover your being. Each act wants to be completed. There is an intrinsic urge into everything to complete itself. Whenever you allow some act to hang around you incomplete, it covers you. Karma avarana. Karma that covers you. Klesa avarana. Greed, hate, jealousy, and things like that. They are called klesas, impurities. They cover you. Have you watched it? An angry person remains almost always angry. Sometimes less, sometimes more, but angry all the same. He is ready to jump upon anything. He is ready by any excuse to go into rage. He is boiling within. And so is the jealous person. The jealous person goes on searching something to find about which he or she can be jealous. The jealous wife goes on looking into the pockets of the husband if she can find something. In his letters, in his files, if she can find something. Mullah Nasruddin, whenever he comes home, there is some fight for something or other. His wife is such a great searcher that she finds always something or other. Some phone number in his diary. And she becomes suspicious. A hair on his coat. And she goes into great investigation. From where this hair has come. One day she could not find anything, not even a hair. Mullah has done everything that day. She started still crying and weeping, and Mullah said, "Now what is the matter? Not even a single hair you have been able to find on my coat." She said, "That's why I am crying. So now you have started going with bald women? It is very difficult really to find a bald woman. But that is the mind of a jealous person. These are coverings. Buddha calls them kleshas, impurities. The egoist always in search for something, either to brag about or to feel hurt. The possessive person is always in search to find something so that he can show his possessiveness, or to find something negative so that he can fight for it. People go on, and I'm not talking about others, I'm talking about you. Just watch your mind, what you go on searching for. Watch your mind 24 hours and you will come across all these coverings, avaranas, either incomplete acts or impurities. Or third is called gaya avaranas, beliefs, opinions, ideologies, knowledge coverings. They don't allow you to know. They don't give you space enough to see. These three coverings have to be dropped. When these three coverings are dropped, then one dwells in nothingness. That word dwelling is also to be understood. Buddha says he dwells in nothingness. It is his home. Nothingness is his home. He dwells in it. It is a dwelling. He loves it. He is utterly in tune with it. It is not alien. He does not feel like an outsider there. And he does not feel like he is staying in a hotel and tomorrow he will have to leave it. It is his dwelling. When thought coverings have been dropped, nothingness is your home. You are in utter harmony with it. Kierkegaard and Sartre have never been there. They have only speculated about it. They only think about it, how it will be. That's why Kierkegaard feels trembling. He simply thinks, you think, just think how it will be when you will die. And you will be put on a funeral pyre. And you will be finished forever. And then you will not be able to see these beautiful trees, these beautiful people. And you will not laugh again. And you will not love again. And you will not see the star. And the world will continue and you will not be there at all. Can't you feel a shivering? Can't you feel a trembling? All will continue. The birds will sing. And the sun will rise. And the oceans will roar. And some eagle will go on and on, higher and higher, flying. And the flowers will be there, and the fragrance, and the fragrance of the wet earth, all that will be there. And suddenly one day you will not be, and your body will be dead. This beautiful body that you have been living with, and you have been taking so much care. It was ill and you were disturbed. And one day, it will be so useless that the people who had loved it, the same people will take it to a funeral pyre and put it on fire. Just visualize it. Speculate, and trembling comes. Kierkegaard must have speculated about it. He must have been a very fear-oriented person. The story is told about him that he was a rich man's son. The father died. He has left enough money for Kirk God. So he never worked. He continuously contemplated. He could afford it easily. There was nothing to do. He has enough money in the bank. Every first day of the month he will go to the bank. That was his whole work, to take some money, and then he will live and meditate. In his sense of meditation, it means contemplation, brooding, thinking. That's what English word meditation means. It is not a right translation for a dhyana. When people come to me and I tell them to meditate, they say, on what? The English word means meditating upon something, some object. The Indian word dhyana means being in it, not meditating on something. It is a state, not an activity. So he will contemplate and think and brood and philosophize. It is said that he fell in love with a beautiful woman but could not decide to marry or not to marry. The very phenomenon of love became a trembling in him. For 3 years he brooded over it. And finally he decided not to marry. And he was in love. The whole life he could not forget the woman. The whole life he felt miserable for the woman. The woman was in love. He was in love. Still he decided not to marry. Why? Because the very idea of love created trembling in him. Love is a kind of death. If you really love a person, you die in him. You disappear in him. When you make love, I have to use this word make. It is not right. But no language is really right. So remember, I have to use words with all their limitations. Love cannot be made. Making love is a wrong expression. It happens. But when it happens, when you are in a loving space with somebody, fear comes because you are disappearing. That's why very, very people, many people, millions of people never attain to orgasm, because orgasm is a death. And Kierkegaard was so much in love that he became afraid that he may lose himself in this woman. That fear was too much. He dropped the idea. He refused. He is not going to marry. He suffered his whole life. That he accepted. But because of fear. He was a fear-oriented person. He lived perfectly well. Doing nothing. Just philosophizing. And the day he died is a very strange anecdote. The day he died when he was coming from the bank. It was the first day of some month. He was coming from the bank, taking his money, but this was the last money. He died on the road. It is thought that he died out of fear because now no more money is left in the bank. He was perfectly healthy. He was not ill. There was no reason for him to die so suddenly. But coming from the bank, and the bank manager has said, this is the last. Your money is finished. He could not reach his home. He died on the road. He could not have experienced the nothingness Buddha is talking about. He must have thought about it only. Hence the fear. And Jyapal Sartre also has not been in that space called meditation. He is not a meditator. He is again a thinker.
and utterly Western. He has not known the Eastern way to go in. Hence, freedom looks like a condemnation, and freedom looks like anguish. Just the opposite is the truth. If you go into freedom, into nothingness, there is bliss. If you go into that utter death called love, there is Satori Samadhi. Buddha says he dwells in that nothingness. It is his house. It is not anguish. It is not trembling. It is not a condemnation. He dwells there. It is his home. He has not been made to tremble. He has overcome what can upset. And in the end, he attains to Nirvana. Buddha does not say anything else. He says, you go into this state of nothingness, then Nirvana is a natural outcome. In the end, it comes on its own accord. You need not worry about it. You cannot do anything about it in the first place. You just go into this nothingness, and the nothingness starts growing, growing, becomes vaster and vaster, and one day becomes your whole existence. Then there is Nirvana. You have ceased to be. You have disappeared in the universe. Somebody asks Buddha, when you will be gone and you will be never coming to the body again, what will happen to you? And he said, I will disappear into existence. If you will taste existence, you will taste me. And yes, that is true. If you taste existence, you will taste all the Buddhas. Krishna, Christ, Buddha, Mahavira, Zarathustra, Laozi, Kabir, Nanak. You will taste all the Buddhas. The day you will enter into that nothingness, you will be welcomed by all the Buddhas. The whole existence is throbbing with Buddhahood, because so many Buddhas have disappeared into it. They have raised the very level of existence. You are fortunate, because before you so many Buddhas have entered into existence. When you will be going there, you will not be unwelcome. All those who appear as Buddhas in the three periods of time, fully awake to the utmost, right and perfect enlightenment, because they have relied on the perfection of wisdom. The only refuge is perfection of wisdom, perfection of meditation. In the past it has been so, in the present it is so, in the future it will be so. Anybody who becomes a Buddha becomes through meditation. Take refuge in meditation. Take refuge in nothingness. Enough for today.